listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a triple threat today. Screenwriter, actress, really quadruple threat. Indian classical dancer and singer, right?
Yes.
Please welcome Vaidyanathi Vadrivu. Did I say that? I'm making sure I said it right.
Yes, you did.
All right. Touchdown. You know, I don't usually stumble on names, but you got a lot more consonants than I do. So, you know, I mad respect. You got a beautiful name. Tell me what your name means. Let's start with that.
It is, so there's a garland of flowers called Vaidyanathi Mala, and it's this flower that Lord Vishnu, Krishna, they wear this garland of Vaidyanathi flowers.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're a garland of flowers.
Yes. And it could also mean victory. There's also other meanings, but that's...
My mom listens to all the shows, and she asked who my guest was, and she wanted to know if you were named after the actress.
Oh, no, I wasn't, but I really like Vaidyanathi Mala. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one she mentioned. So I was like, I have to ask her just in case, but it's amazing. So you started Indian classical dancing at what age? Like, what got you into it in the beginning? Was it your family? Did you see somebody that made you want to do it? Like, what got you into it?
It was actresses / dancers like Vaidyanathi Mala. Actually, it's great that you mentioned her. So especially older Hindi and Telugu cinema, they would have more semi-classical and classical dances in the movies. And that was just hypnotizing for me. Right. I would apparently stare at the screen for a very long time, even before I could talk, and you know, it was very obvious that I was glued to the TV and I was mesmerized by the dancers. And my mom really picked up on that. She really fought for me to be in dance classes, even to, you know, even if I was like a little bit not willing. Sometimes I mean I was always wanting to take dance and do dance, but sometimes, you know, we get lazy or whatnot.
It's like such a focus thing too, because it's all technique driven, and it's like you really have to focus with anything artistic like that. So when you're just like, so did it get you to focus? Was it like, because it is a discipline, right?
Yeah, discipline is the key to any of those classical arts. So I definitely learned so much from the classical dances and the classical arts. I mean, discipline is just one of the many things you learn, and you can't survive and you can't do it justice without discipline.
One of the things I love is, you know, with any Indian classical dance, it's the outfit, the garb, like it is so detailed, and there's just so much that goes into it. It's almost part of the spectacle. You know, like the bangles and, you know, the saris or whatever you're dancing in. Tell me, how long does it take you to prep for that? Because it must take well over an hour just to get all that stuff on. And then how comfortable is it to move with all of that on?
It's, I'll go backwards. It's not very comfortable, but it puts you, at least I should speak for myself, it puts me in a certain state of mind. And the Natya Shastra, which are the scriptures where all of the, not only dance poses, but how to get ready for dance and all of the exercises. It's written in this ancient scripture.
Is it in Sanskrit? What is it? Okay.
And the getting ready is a huge part of that. You can't have the dance the actual performance without the whole honoring of getting ready and stepping into that character and stepping into this sacred art form. It's to help you get into that zone.
I love that you're talking about this, because I've seen so many Indian classical recitals and performances, and that's always a thought that I think of. It's like, it's such a beautiful art form because it is so decorated and it's like, it's so poised. It's got so much history. It's got so much storytelling. But the amount of time and prep that goes into even one piece, knowing how to move, because you're probably practicing, you're most likely practicing without any of that stuff on.
Yeah. So
was there an adjustment when you actually wear the outfits and the jewelry, compromise kind of certain movements or anything like that?
Sometimes I think you ideally would do a dress rehearsal. So, but it is always, you know, you're 80-90% of the time doing the dance without all of that. And then suddenly you arrive in this headspace and with all this weight, literal weight on you. So sometimes jumping and whatnot, but like I said, I think there's more positive for me in terms of dressing up because it really makes you honor the dance more. And for me, I feel like, well, I can't mess up, or even if I misstep, I should still represent it in a graceful way because I'm doing something sacred right now.
Well, I love that you bring that up because that brings me to my next question. It's like, what are one of the like deepest or most profound kind of meditations or experience you had doing this art form? Because it is just like laced with history and so much story and legends and, you know what I mean? And then it's also like this religious practice in some way, you know? So tell me like what kind of, you know, profundity you experienced just going through this art form.
I would say not just performing it, but definitely watching some really amazing legendary dancers and having the privilege of being able to learn from them. A lot of them come and do workshops in the U.S. So Madhavi Mudgal, her niece Arushi Mudgal, who are Odissi dancers. Odissi is one of the many classical Indian dance styles. And watching them was very profound. There is a Kuchipudi dancer, Shobha Naidu. When I was very young, and I just remember being just like, I couldn't speak when I met her.
Wow.
She was just so powerful. Even after, you know, after the show, she wanted to relax, and there was a dinner, and she didn't have any of her makeup, and she didn't have her costume on, and still, I was like in awe.
Wow.
So there's definitely a reverence I always had for the dancers, and they did feel like spiritual beings. And then many times when I dance different styles, I can't even name a single moment. It's not necessarily during the performance or during a practice. It's happened several times in both of those headspaces.
It's kind of like you're put yourself in nirvana, you know. It's like you're putting yourself in this like in between place of reality and dreams. You're kind of creating this kind of stuff. Did you ever feel like there was something that you were looking for either in a piece or a song to express some of the movements? Like, what did you look for that kind of drove you to kind of want to do certain pieces over others?
A lot of times it's the tune that really drives me. Even if I don't quite understand the meaning, I seem to follow the tune, and that dictates a lot of the movements. Like, I'm inspired to do certain movements, and a lot of times it feels like, well, this is the movement that the music is telling me to do. It's almost like matter of fact in my head and the way I interpret the music. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
You know what? Let's play this clip because I love that you're actually doing this Indian dance to Vivaldi, which combines my love of classical music. I studied classical music, so I love that you incorporated that in this because it's like seeing my two cultures kind of collide in such a beautiful way. So we're going to play this dance video of you. This is Vaijayanti dancing to Vivaldi. Thank you. That's beautiful. So beautiful. You know, I've never actually seen anybody dancing Indian classical to classical music. What made you choose that piece?
So I have to give full credit to Daniel Phoenix Singh, the artistic director of Dakshina Dance Company, which is in D.C. And at the time, I used to live in D.C. I wasn't living there anymore, but he asked me to choreograph and perform this. All of the rest of the choreo was more modern contemporary set to Vivaldi, which is also a very amazing mix. And he wanted something that was very much Indian, but we all had this, the outfit that you saw, we all had those outfits and we did some group pieces together. So it was all his vision. So I don't take credit for that, but now I am definitely inspired to go back and try to do that. That was one of the most challenging pieces for me to choreograph because I, you know, the meaning, it's just the whole energy of the music, Western classical Vivaldi is so different from anything that we typically dance to.
Yeah, and the scales are different, the rhythm is different. It's like, it's a different sound altogether. So it's kind of, you know, I saw like elements of ballet kind of infused with this, but also Indian classical kind of movements. Tell me like how you choreographed this and what kind of story you were telling.
I went based on the words, but the actual process of choreographing was just telling myself every day before my, at the time, corporate 9 to 5, I would have to go to the gym and put in some time just experimenting. That's the way I choreograph. It's like something eventually sticks, but I just do the dance that comes to me several times over and over again. And I'm like, oh, that's a good discovery. So I learn as I dance. I discover the choreo as I dance, and kind of referencing what I mentioned before, where the music and the tune moves me. It's each time I practice the dance or experiment with the dance, it's kind of like, where will the music take me now, and what movement is going to come out of me? I don't know.
Well, you know what's cool too, in the next clip you're singing, and what I love about this music, it's like it's so different than Western music. I started singing classical music and then it's been like everything Western, so mm-hmm. like hearing the notes in the scale just being so different, like there's just little, there's quarter tones, there's like different like tones in the scale that make ragas and like all of that style of music. Tell me, like, were you listening to that stuff all the time? Did you have like vocal lessons? Did you have singers that influenced you to kind of like learn the practice? Tell me a little bit of that mythology.
With singing, I don't identify as a singer typically.
You sounded great in that video.
This was me stretching my boundaries and definitely my mom's wish of me performing to my own singing. She wants me and my siblings to do that. She always encouraged us to pursue our artistic passions. And actually my sister, my younger sister, is the real singer of the family. So she doesn't do it full time, but she really has this amazing voice that she's been gifted with. So yeah, I was like, this is me just stretching my boundaries. And my good friend Kevin filmed it and mixed the sound and all of that. So he's a musician, audio engineer. And yeah, we grew up listening, and I still listen to primarily Indian music from all over the subcontinent.
You have to show me like what your playlist looks like, because...
Oh, it's like all Indian. It's like, what do you want? Do you want South Indian classical? Do you want Tollywood? Do you want Bollywood? But there's just so much within Indian music, and I love so many other kinds of music outside of the South Asian geographical area, but I still... I just come back to it all the time.
So within the genres, what are the things that pull you to like one thing over another or resonate with something?
It's a lot of nostalgia. And growing up, as I mentioned, we would watch Indian movies. We would hear Indian music play. And I can only imagine coming to a new country, you want some kind of comfort from home. So what do you have to recreate that outside of food and music? Because the people are all different, right?
Right.
So it's very prevalent in, I'm sure, a lot of our households, a lot of immigrant households. So I really connected with it, and it gives me that sense of like nostalgia, not just for my childhood, but what would it have been like if we grew up in India? And of course, in India, people are listening to all kinds of music. They're not sitting listening to only Indian music by any means. And but yeah, that's I guess one really. Well,
it's amazing because you've been so immersed in it. Like you grew up with it, and then it became like such a driving force. Let's play this clip of you singing and doing the Indian dance, and then we'll talk more about the other stuff.
You could play half. That's good.
We're gonna play the whole thing. All right. Don't worry. Don't be embarrassed. It sounds great. It's awesome. All right. Here it is.
Ooh.
What's not to like? Why are you embarrassed by that? It's amazing. It's awesome.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. No, and where did you film it? Tell me about what went into this process. You had a lot of outfits. I know that. So tell me what kind of like sculpted the song and kind of helped you figure out the message you wanted to convey. I know it's a cover, but tell me about the story that you kind of wanted to express.
This was just, you know, out in nature, and it was filmed in the outskirts of Austin. So there wasn't much of a, you know, it wasn't overthought, I should say. It was just more like the song is breezy and light, and let's keep the setting pretty natural and not too constructed, you know. So
what I love too, it's like the Indian scale. There's a blues guitarist named Derek Trucks who's obsessed with Indian classical music, and he actually uses slide guitar and he plays Indian kind of scales over blues music, and it's so bitchin'. And what I'm obsessed about with it is how it's like it's using all these crazy intervals and bends and slides, which kind of like makes your ear, it pushes it in all these different cool directions. So I'm obsessed with the scales and how it kind of feels. How did you kind of learn the just like expressing, like basically the way I can express it? It's like they're vocal licks, but they're like guitar bends. You're sliding up to notes. How do you know when to do that, when not to do that? Because I just find it so kind of captivating.
It's not so it's not so conscious. It's a subconscious, I guess, because I've been hearing this kind of music and you just imitate it since you're little. It's as difficult to answer as how do you know how to string together a sentence in your language?
That makes sense.
Like, how are you speaking right now? How are you stringing together the language? So, of course, there are some notes that are hard to hit, so you just keep matching it and matching it. But the actual, like, how do you get from this note to this note is not a very, I don't know if I could write a step-by-step guide to how.
Well, it's so cool because it's never a straight line. It's like, it's all these kind of like bends, and there's sometimes like four notes in one note. That's what is so cool about it. I think it makes your ear just want to listen. It's so interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. So tell me now, you are a screenwriter and you are, you know, an actress and all this. Tell me how all these elements of dance and singing kind of propelled you to kind of want to write, want to act, want to get you into this new kind of genre, and how did these things help define you in this new genre?
The acting was spurred by the Indian classical dance because there's a lot of expression and storytelling in the dance itself. And of course, that combined with always watching these movies and seeing these actresses who both can act, but they also dance, I felt, oh, I would love to be that person. And musical theater was my first entry into acting on a stage in a non-Indian context.
Do you remember what your first musical was?
It was when I was in eighth grade, and I played Sarah Brown in Guys and Dolls.
That's awesome. I know Guys and Dolls. I've done some songs from that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And then I did, in high school, I would participate in different plays and choir and whatnot. So I feel like that is my first, those are my first theater experiences. And then on camera, I did a short film a long time ago, maybe a decade ago, but more recently there was another short film. So it's been short films and, you know, commercials. So that's been my acting journey. And then screenwriting was about 5 years ago is when I first started writing. And it started with UCB sketch comedy. And I said, if I couldn't make the teacher laugh, because we were in New York and the teacher won't give you a polite laugh, they won't fake it, they're going to be pretty honest. And if I didn't make him laugh a few classes, I'm sure I was like, yeah, sure, not everything I write will be funny, but I will see myself out the door, you know, if this is not my calling, if I don't succeed at it. But I did write some things that made the class laugh, the teacher laugh, and he had some good notes. positive feedback and all of that. So, and I found it exhilarating, and I found it as a great outlet for different characters that had been bumping around in my brain. One thing we didn't talk about is my anthropology background. So
yeah, I want to talk about that too. Yeah.
So when you said singer, I was like, I'm much more of an anthropologist than a singer. But the anthropology part is important to note, because a lot of the work of an anthropologist, applied anthropologist, is observing people in their context and taking meticulous notes, and then kind of resurfacing the distillation of those notes. What happened? What is the essence of what this person is all about? Their values, their culture, their myths, their taboos. And you report this back to your corporate clients. But if you do that, if you translate that to screenwriting, well, now you don't have to present it in neat little boxes and all sanitized. You could add the humor back in. You could add the nuances of all the human observations. So it was an outlet for me to have all of those other observations that I couldn't put in my slide decks into the screenwriting. It was also a place where if there was someone I just was annoyed by, or something happened, I could I could make a caricature out of them.
Right.
It was really liberating.
Well, it's like, you know, I had a songwriting teacher that used to tell me, find the remarkable in the unremarkable. So sometimes when you're just like observing, it's like the very kind of like mundane is what becomes exceptional, because you're drawing from something that, you know, many people may kind of like experience in a coffee shop or in traffic or whatever it is, whatever the annoyance is. And you can create a whole character that can just be unnerving, you know, to be around based on that. So it's kind of cool that that's part of your background, because it's like this observational part of developing characters that gives you an edge. Mm-hmm. Do you find that like your character development becomes easier because you've been observing and kind of watching people and characters in life all the time?
I feel like that is definitely the stronger part of my writing, the character development. And I struggle a little bit with the plot, like where do we go from here? Because I just want to go deeper into the characters and the scenarios and scenes they're in, because I see all of those things so clearly, and how they would react and how just, you know, how they would be in these contexts and how that could explain more about the character. But yeah, I really liked what your teacher said.
It's awesome, isn't it? I still use it. I use it when I want to teach. I use it when I think about writing and
stuff. When I taught applied anthropology, I would say find the insane in the mundane. So I was awesome. Very cool. Because the kids would inevitably be like, this is so boring. I'm watching somebody walk around in a park. I was like, keep looking, keep watching. You might stumble upon a gem. So
that's amazing. And you know what's really cool is you're at a really cool time where the brown female voice really needs to be heard. Do you find a responsibility in what you're writing has to be kind of like directed in that kind of direction with that on your shoulders? Or do you just feel like this is liberating and this is a time for us to write about anything and just anything goes, and that kind of helps your creativity?
Most of what I write is brown female centered. The protagonist is almost often a Indian female, I should speak, because it's from my perspective and that's my truth. And I want to be as authentic as possible. So I write mostly from that place. There's at least one character, if not the main character, that resembles a lot of my life experiences. And it's not to say I don't want other characters, but I do start from that place of truth and then go up from there. Well, which other cultural context have I been able to immerse myself in? And where else can I find an authentic voice, but also show a different point of view? So it kind of radiates out from my experience. And of course, my parents are from India. I've never lived in India.
Right, me too.
I lived in...
Where did you grow up?
The suburbs of Chicago. Well, the first part was a city, and then when we were 10 years old, moved to the suburbs. So very WASPy and somewhat Jewish white neighborhoods until I was 18. And then I go move to Miami for college, very Caribbean, Latin, largely Cuban and Jamaican and Trinidadian. So I felt like I immersed myself in Caribbean cultures. And then I moved to DC, which is a different kind of a mix of intellectual cultures and people from all over the world, diplomats and whatnot. So I've been lucky to know all of these, lived in New York and now LA. So I write from those experiences, and I've taken a part of all those experiences into my being. I am not solely Indian and solely Chicagoan, you know? So,
yeah. Well, one of the things we parallel, it's like, we have this parallel experience of like being Indian, we're coconuts. It's like, we don't live in India. We're not from India. We hail from India, but we don't have those roots as far as like living and kind of like growing up in that environment. But you're also trying to fit into this culture that is kind of American, Western, you know, and all those things. Do you find that like coming from that place of where you're writing from is trying to fit into that mold, or try to even just express how crazy it is to try and fit into something that is so kind of distant to relate to? You know, initially, I think it was culture for both of us to kind of like figure out, okay, I'm the chocolate chip in this glass. Let's figure out how I can create an identity.
I would say that, yeah, there's definitely been times in my childhood I could point to that I felt really conscious of how different I looked, and I wished I didn't look so different. All of those, you know, typical I'm the minority, but I don't want to necessarily depict those. When you asked earlier about the responsibility I take on as a brown female writer, like I said, I write from my perspective, but I also felt like I was a little bit of an oddball. Even within the Indian Students Association, I was not pre-med. I studied anthropology and international studies. I had a very diverse set of friends when I could have had an all South Asian group of friends, you know, that I just ran in different circles and had a different life and a different career path. So I was already very different. So these are the types of characters I want to depict beyond just I'm Indian and American. And then to the point of wanting to fit in and trying to fit in, I felt like maybe if that was part of my narrative, I shed it pretty quickly. And Miami was very liberating and helpful in that way. But I would also say my upbringing and my mom was very proud to be not just Indian, but Telugu, and right. instilled that linguistic tradition. So we speak it. I mean, I think I could practice more and get better at it, but she also was really adamant about us learning to read and write. And
you could read in Hindi and write in Hindi?
No, Telugu.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I don't speak Hindi, which is something I would love to learn, but it's also not my mother tongue. So I don't feel an obligation to, you know, it's an Indian language, but it's not my Indian language. So
well, there's so many, there's like over what, 20, I think, in India. Yeah. So, but I always feel like Hindi is like the base that people start because it's a national language. So that's why I asked. It's like, do you only know Telugu, or do you know other, do you know
Tamil? I know Spanish.
Okay. Oh, wow. You know Spanish. That's awesome. That's the Miami influence in you. That's amazing. Yeah. So let's play this other clip. Tell me a little bit about this clip. It's from Bollywood to Hollywood. Tell us a little bit about what that's like.
Oh, yeah. So this originated from my UCB character class. And I didn't quite come up with this character, but I came up with some other character. And then I decided to create this character for a comedy show. So I was the character break in the middle of a stand-up comedy show that was produced and put on by Alingan Mitra, who's a really amazing comic based in New York. And he would do this crazy funny South Asians show in New York every few months pre-pandemic. And I created this for the Diwali show. And then it turned into my first TV pilot that I wrote.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
But it started with this character and this performance.
Here's the clip.
Please welcome to the stage every female character from the Bollywood movies from the 80s.
Oh, Diwali, and I learned so much in my time here. Like, for example, when we go walking, we just call it walking. You guys call it choreographed dances. In my world, when a man defends my honor, we call it normal. In your world, it's choreographed fights. And what I call a healthy outlet of emotions, you call melodrama. Acha! I was so offended, I almost went back to celebrate Diwali with my family in my castle. But then, as I was running to Brooklyn, I saw Angela celebrating Diwali. What a strange sight to see. This fair and lovely lady wearing the ugliest kurta I've ever seen. She was like having 1,000 candles in front of her, but she wasn't celebrating Diwali. She was celebrating a new form of enlightenment. She called it being woke. And I said, how can I be this woke? So I learned something. I learned that these woke people, they don't like these naya naya bangles and these beautiful clothes. They prefer to wear the discarded clothing of a white woman. So I too wanted to wear those overalls from that Bushwick thrift store. So that one day my woke dream boy will fall in love with me. And so you know, they call these people hipsters also, but they don't even use their hips. They kind of dance like this, like this. And you know, these woke people, they don't have to look pretty all the time. They don't have to do their hair, put on tons of makeup, and they don't even have to cry pretty. Sachi hai, they don't have to cry pretty, but I still do. So, you know, I do want to find my woke husband. Where is he? Where can I find him? I'm tired of these over-eager heroes chasing me around trees. These woke men, I chase them around trees. Much on Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. I want to be like those hashtag activists. Create a Facebook post about a terrible trust. The trust that allows Amber to go to Burning Man because she doesn't have to quit her job as a haiku typist on Myrtle Avenue. Yeah! I want to change is real. It's real. It's real. And I want to be like those hashtag minimalists and get rid of all of my clothes and buy new clothes. White shirts, black pants that say hashtag minimalism.
Yeah.
Most of all, I want to find my hashtag feminist husband. The type of man that quotes RBG every day. The type of man that wants me to be CEO because he doesn't want to work. The type of man who doesn't have time to listen to my feelings because he's busy marching for the voices of women to be heard. What's that? What's that? We're not in Brooklyn? We're in Manhattan? There's no hashtag woke, hashtag hipster, hashtag feminist men here. There's something called finance bros. I must leave you all. I have to go to Brooklyn at once. Happy Diwali.
Awesome, awesome. Tell me what kind of went into creating this character and kind of, I know it's a mix of all the Bollywood actresses, you know, and their storylines. But tell us.
Well, I used the old school Bollywood, and I was purposeful in saying 1980s, but I think it's more like 1950s, 1960s, because I also don't want to make fun of and kind of make the Bollywood heroine a monolith either. And this is, of course, I threw in some Hindi there. I don't like I mentioned, I don't speak Hindi, but this is specifically in reference to Bollywood. So I threw in some Hindi words there. It was definitely the most, you know, silly and girly and campy of the characters that we've seen in these Bollywood movies. And so that's just fun to play. And a very optimistic one too. Like a very, you know, she's everything is just like through the eyes of wonder.
Right.
And so that I wanted to give that spirit so that anything I was saying, it could be like, oh, look at those fake feminists there. You know, I could say it like that or like, wow, these feminists, but I'm actually calling them out because they're fake.
Right.
But I wanted that gentle touch of optimism and innocence in everything that I said. And really, I mean, both wanting to emulate those characters, but also wanting to call out those people were just the perfect, it was a perfect merge. And that spurred the content. Like, okay, who do I want to call out? People who, it's just the people performing
right.
progressive causes.
Right, the people that you're seeing through, you know, it's like,
exactly.
You know, yeah. That's what's cool. It's like, you do it with, you like kill him with kindness with this character. You know, it's like,
yeah.
you're like hitting the dagger, but you're like doing it with grace and sweetness. So it doesn't hurt as much. You know what I mean? But,
you get it.
Yeah, totally.
That's exactly what it is. So that's, I had a lot of fun performing and creating this character because of all those reasons.
Who would you say are some of your biggest influences as far as acting, screenwriting, and let's even reference the dancing and music? Who are some of your biggest influences as far as artists in each of those genres?
Biggest influences. Well, this one was Sridevi. I mean, I think she was innocent, but not dumb. You know, wow. She's extremely talented in so many ways and comedic, which we don't see a lot in the Indian actresses.
Right.
And she pulled off comedy so well. So, and with that, I'll branch off and say comedic writers, comedic actresses, all of them are inspirational. Tina Fey, Issa Rae. When I came to LA, I said, I want to be the Indian Issa Rae. And she's just so amazing in so many ways. And there's probably so many I'm forgetting. But dance-wise, I mentioned some in Odissi, Arushi Mudgal, and who I'm friends with. She's wonderful. She's wow. awesome. And her aunt, Madhavi Mudgal, and Kuchpuri, Venkati Chinna Satyam, and there's so many. Kathak, Briju Maharaj, of course, and yeah.
What about like acting? Would you say Bollywood's been a major influence, or do you kind of draw from more Western influences as far as acting?
I think Bollywood is still a huge influence, I have to say. These days, I was very surprised and amazed by Alia Bhatt's performance in Gangubai, for example. And I believe the movie was called Highway that she played. Both were very tragic characters, but she really was so raw in all of them. That's just one. I mean, I know there's other fantastic actresses that are not coming to mind right now, but yeah, that's still a huge influence in terms of, I'm going to think of it after.
That's always how it is when somebody asks, you're like, I'm trying to blank, I don't know, but yes, yeah. you'll text me later and be like, it's this person. No, I mean, what I love is like you bring a lot of color, and I don't mean just in skin tone, but I'm saying in your breadth of experience to your characters. How do you feel like that can resonate with people that aren't Indian or aren't, you know, part of this kind of a sect of society? Tell me, like, how do you feel like your art can resonate with people that have no relation to it?
Well, first acknowledging that it might not resonate with them.
No, it will, because everybody feels like an outsider. So
yeah,
that's the biggest thing, you know?
Well, that's why something like the character we just saw works, because she is very obviously a fish out of water.
Right.
And just so obvious, so out there, that if we've ever felt like a fish out of water, she is both out of place in terms of time and geography and just reality. So right. I think you know, if you're like, wow, if she can feel comfortable in her skin in this completely foreign in every way land, then maybe I can. So maybe that's, there's something there.
I think that's your shtick. I think you should always write from that fish out of water place, because everybody can relate to that. I mean, it doesn't matter. You're from one side of the country and you're moving to the other side of the country. You still feel the cultural difference. You know, it's like LA and New York are completely different. You know, it's like just the way it is. So I think that's something that can resonate. Where can people find you if they want to cast you in something, if they want to collaborate with you on writing something? Where can people find you online?
Instagram is probably the best, and that way you can see some of this acting stuff and dancing stuff if you need any reference. It is at, it's my full name, so I'll spell it out. At Vyjayanti underscore Vajrevu, at VYJAYANTHI underscore VADREVU.
I always tell people, spell it out, because people are dumb, but they're definitely going to need you to spell it out with your name. But it's awesome. You have an amazing name. You have so much talent. What's next for you? Tell me what you're working on. What's percolating as far as like what you want to express artistically?
What's next? I want to shoot a short film that I'd written about a year and a half ago, and raising money for that. And it is a drama. It's actually not a comedy. I love writing comedy, but this, it was like a story I just had to tell, told through the eyes of an Indian classical dancer. And I hope to shoot that soon. I'm also writing other, working on other concepts, of course, with the strike, both the writer strike and the upcoming actor's strike. I definitely am wanting to honor, I'm not part of the WGA, but I want to honor, you know, all of the things that they're fighting for. And so we'll see how that affects me. And with that said, I've been also exploring my anthropology beginnings. So we'll see how all of that merges together. Keep practicing the art at the very least.
And keep dancing, keep acting, keep writing. Because you know what? I created this platform for artists basically to follow their careers along this journey. So we want to welcome you back in about 9 or 10 months when you have this short done, or when you have other things going on too, because we want to showcase all your work, because this is what it's about. So thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you. You've been so lovely. And thank you so much for inviting me here creating this space and always being such a kind and generous person.
I do my best, as do you. And you know what? I love your love of animals. Your love of animals.
Oh, yeah. That's how we first met and bonded. Yes.
That's right. Well, Vyjayanti, please check her out on Instagram. We wish you nothing but the best. And on behalf of Sam, myself, Vyjayanti, we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.